Money FM 89.3, best of your money. Money and Me on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
He goes by the user ID Logic Fool on trading platform eToro, where he is one of the most popular investors. Some 550 people copy his investment portfolio. Alan Michael Mullins retired at the age of 42. His 18-year investment track record posts a gain of 1,560%. Incredible. He's been investing for over 30 years, full-time for the last 10. He invests in scalable, disruptive companies that leverage network effects or user-generated data, a group that he calls digital economy stocks. Now, these stocks have to meet his 8 pillars of investing, 8 principles that we're going to find out more about today. I've been looking forward to this show. Welcome, Mick.
Good morning, Michelle. I've been enjoying your music, money and music. What else do we need?
We need to know how you made all this happen for yourself. So take us back to when it all started. Now, did your investment journey really start as a teenager with a dream for retiring when you wanted to?
Yes, exactly right. But I didn't start out very well. I made every mistake in the book and probably made up some new mistakes the first 10 years. And then I learned via a process of evolution. I kept doing things that worked and stopped doing things that didn't work. And I'm still making mistakes today, but the less mistakes I make, the better I seem to do.
Yeah, those who can't fail can't learn, I think. But, you know, your policy is invest from your salary and invest, 3 times a year?
Yes, I'm a firm believer in dollar cost averaging. I mean, if people want to start investing now, you know, we're at the top of a 12-year bull run in the middle of a global pandemic. You know, it just doesn't seem like the time to put all your money in one go. Now, most people's biggest cash hoard is just the money they haven't earned yet. So that ties in very nicely with dollar cost averaging. Dollar cost averaging basically is saving from your income and maybe once a quarter investing a sensible amount into a sensible portfolio.
All right. Now, take us back to those early days, though. Are you basically self-taught, Mick?
Essentially, yes. I would say learning through trial and error, as you say.
But this basic habit of saving, where did that come from? I mean, you couldn't have started if you didn't decide to put aside half your salary the moment you started working?
Yeah, I mean, as soon as I had a proper job, I was pretty much aiming for 50%. So I didn't have, you know, I shared a small apartment and I didn't have a car and I didn't have any expensive hobbies. So obviously we can't invest if we can't save. Mm. So that was a very critical part of my early investing years. Yeah.
And I wonder if living anywhere in the world helped kickstart your investment journey. Did you invest in Hong Kong? I remember being in Hong Kong and everybody I talked to, including the woman selling vegetables, was investing, you know. I wonder if living in Hong Kong helped your journey in any way.
Yeah, I spent the 90s in Hong Kong. And, you know, I had started investing before that, but that was really where I started investing more seriously. And actually, I started my proper portfolio in Hong Kong in about 2002, 2003.
Okay, so you retired at age 42. So tell us, did you hit your own target?
I kind of blew my target away. Yeah, so, you know, I found myself making more money when I wasn't working at my job than when I was working at my job.
Oh, I love that.
So I thought, okay, so this is what financial independence feels like. I can choose how to spend my time. And that was basically, you know, my wife and my daughter and my health and my friends.
And that is the goal, to retire when you choose to. And that's what smart investing can do for you. And you say you're not about, you know, you're not about luck. You're not about leverage either, are you?
No, don't short, don't borrow, don't leverage. That's all, you know, if you want to do all that stuff, go to the casino.
All right. Walk us through your 8 principles, Mick, of investing that has done you so well.
Yeah, and this is exactly what's evolved over the last 20 years. So that the first three are really core, and that is disruptive. So doing something in a completely new way, for example, teledoc with telemedicine. You know, you don't have to drive down to the clinic and wait for the, you know, wait with other sick people and then wait for the doctor. You know, you just press a button and within 10 minutes you're speaking to a GP or a specialist if necessary. So that's very disruptive. Second would be scalability. Mm-hmm. Now, software is really scalable because, you know, if you make the software, it doesn't matter whether you sell 10 copies or a million copies. The costs, the variable costs increase very slowly. A good example there is Netflix. They make a show and they can keep it forever and show it as many times as they like.
Right.
Network effects, critical, which means, you know, if you and I have a telephone, that's great for you and me. But if everyone we know has a telephone, it's exponentially more useful for everyone involved. And a good example there is the Zillow, which is sort of the U.S. property guru. With home rentals, purchases, sales, and agents involved. Growing geographics and demographics, another pillar, very important. Mm-hmm. Where you know there's a lot of countries where you know internet penetration is still happening. You know there's the example of you know today's 18-year-olds mm-hmm. are digital natives, and today's 80-year-olds are digital dinosaurs. But you know as the decades go through. You know, all those teenagers are going to be spending more and more and more of their money on the digital economy. So that's an example of growing geographics or demographics. A great company example there is C Limited, which people would know by Shopee or Garena. They own both of those brands, growing very well in Southeast Asia and Taiwan.
Is C Limited profitable?
They are not yet making money, but maybe, you know, I should add that maybe as another pillar. Sometimes when a company's not profitable, it scares away all the very conservative investors.
Right.
So that the more aggressive or the more far-thinking investors can maybe get the same companies at a discount to what they would otherwise if it was already profitable.
Right.
Many of my best companies started out and not yet making profit. So I keep a very close eye on the revenue growth. And profit should follow.
Right, but this fits, Shopee C Limited fits into your pillar for looking for companies that are going to be able to exploit growing demographics.
Indeed, and in fact, most of the companies meet most of the criteria. These are a particularly good example of one criteria.
That's great. So we're on five now, I believe. Fifth pillar?
Yes. User-generated product, right? So like a Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest would be my favorite example there where, you know, how much money does the company have to spend on product development if you know, we are the product? I find that's a very useful pillar.
Yeah,
well.
I remember when YouTube first came out. That's how old I am. I'm dating myself. Mm-hmm. But when YouTube first came out, I thought, who is going to want to watch a channel full of amateur videos that we make ourselves? And now YouTube is the only channel that I watch. It's
who
just
knew?
Amazing.
Absolutely. Yeah, amazing.
So Instagram, Facebook, Pinterest, under the user-generated product. Pillar, right?
Yes, indeed. And then we have bigger dog or early mover, if you like. You know, it's not necessarily always the first one. It's not necessarily always the biggest one, but there's some combination of, you know, big and early that helps these guys build a moat, maybe. A great example there is DocuSign, which is increasingly popular globally for digital signatures.
Absolutely. I wonder, when it comes to first users, were you looking at Coinbase overnight at all?
I looked at Coinbase, and yeah, I mean they're the first listed crypto exchange. Good for them. I often wonder, is crypto part of the digital economy? Or is it part of the, you know, casino? We'll have to see how that plays out. I'm not touching it for the moment.
Oh, you and Jerome Powell. Okay. You're in good company. All right. What's next, Nick, in the pillars?
great leadership. And actually, I give Shopify as an example there. Oh. Although, as you said, he's got a bit of a challenge on his hand now. I mean, he's saying that these executive leadership departures are just as a matter of course. But when you have four critical people leaving over the space of a few months, you have to scratch your head a bit.
Mm.
So we'll see how he responds to the challenge.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And the last one is consumer facing, almost a sort of B2C, where the more people you put your brand, your product in front of, the more powerful the brand and seems to be, and thereby the performance of the company. So a great one there is Lemonade Inc., which is an insurtech company that operates a very easy to use artificially intelligence for screening and approvals and very fast payments, and a wonderful business model that basically gives any money from the reinsurance pot to charity that they haven't used up after taking their flat fee.
Fantastic. Didn't know that about Lemonade. These are gold principles for investing. We're learning from Alan Michael Mullins, or if you're on eToro, you know him by user ID Logic Fool. Maybe you even copy his portfolio, done pretty well, incredibly well, I have to say, over the last 18 years, over 1,500% gain. Now, when we talk about digital economy stocks, which is sort of the staple for your portfolio, you differentiate between tech stocks and digital economy stocks. For example, Tesla's not on your list, right? Why is that?
No, that's right. Yes. I could almost call them, well, they're tech stocks, but I call them, you know, sometimes I call them fake tech, some of them, because, you know, for example, Tesla, fantastic car, fantastic brands. They make and market very pretty cars. So, you know, you're making a car is not the same as making a piece of software. You've got to make the car. There are massive costs and massive variable costs, you know, and autonomous driving is decades away. And Tesla's actually not doing particularly well in the autonomous driving technology arena. So they are tech, but not digital economy. So basically, if it meets my eight pillars, it's digital economy. If it doesn't, for example, solar panels, space exploration.
No pharma stocks either, huh?
Biotech. Now, you know, it's not my niche. Maybe there's some biotech that meets my pillars. but it's not my space. So I don't dabble in biotech. You know, nanotechnology, robotics, crypto, microchips, space exploration. These all don't meet my investment pillars. I've dabbled them in the past, you know, with varying levels of success, but they, you know, what has evolved to be optimal is my eight pillars.
So know your circle of competency. Now, when it comes to digital economy stocks, are you interested in Chinese tech companies? And how, as an investor, do you view that $2.8 billion slap on the wrist for Alibaba?
Yes, I think the stock rose on the news. I think it was only was it 5% of 2019 revenues that the fine was equivalent to. Mm. So they got off lightly. They've been asked to stop the monopolistic practices and report accordingly. And I think the market just felt they got off lightly. Is there more to come? Is there more to come for the other tech and fintech giants in China? Possibly, you know, what's going on with Ant? You know, with the regulators pulling the listing last year. You know, I think it was too big and too independent, and they put in place, you know, more regulation, making it more of a regulated like a bank, and less regulated, you know, less unregulated like a you know, fintech company.
So will this antitrust clampdown on Chinese companies impact how much you invest in Chinese tech companies?
It's an ongoing concern, as is regulation for all tech globally at the moment. Mm-hmm. So we need to keep an eye on it, but I do consider it just background noise to the general trend. I think that the Chinese market, the Chinese tech leaders will continue to do very well. There's always going to be the unexpected regulatory moves, more so in China than in the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. So, you know, risks are higher, but then those risks are reflected in the valuations. You know, some of the tech giants, you know, Baidu, Alibaba, Tencent, and maybe Baidu will be replaced by ByteDance later in the year. Mm-hmm. You know, they are coming at lower valuations than some of their Western peers. So the risks are reflected, and maybe that makes it worthwhile. And I do indeed hold the companies I've been talking about.
How much dry powder do you have on the side? Prior to Jan 2021, your portfolio was not fully invested. Did that change during the pandemic?
Yes. So we have to differentiate here between the type of investor. So if you're young and starting, and you have your emergency money and your safety money, and you're not investing money that you need to use over the next 5 years, you can put money into the markets and be fully invested on your portfolio money. Mm. If you're like me and retired and no income, it doesn't make sense to put all of your money into the markets. So my eToro portfolio has been fully invested since last January to service those people who want to copy me and copy my performance. Whereas my own money, I do keep varying levels of cash because I'm older and have no income. So right now, you know, I sold through the rises last year, and right now I'm probably sitting on 30 or 40% cash.
Now, you've talked about the NASDAQ 100. It's quite popular with the eToro crowd. That's an instrument considered a strong representation of certain market sectors like healthcare and tech and retail. It's a stock market index up, I believe, some 14% over the last 6 months. Are you bullish on the NASDAQ 100?
I'm bullish long term. Again, it holds a lot of my favorite digital economy companies. So, you know, long term, and you know, people should view long term as 5 to 10 years. You know, what can happen in the short term? Well, I can tell you the markets are definitely going to go up or down, and we don't really know which way anything's going to go in the short term. And as I said, you know, we are at the top of a 12-year bull market coming out of a global recession. So, you know, I would say start slow and build over the years.
We've seen investor interest move out of tech, move more into cyclicals, move into commodities in anticipation of inflation. And I wonder, how do the scenarios of possible inflation or economic growth for the U.S. economy factor into your portfolio?
It's really interesting what's going on, because we have all the pent up demand and driving growth. I think U.S. GDP forecasts are 6 to 7% for this year, which is, you know, stellar. On the other hand, you know, we do have concerns of rising inflation expectations. And a lot of people are saying, oh, well, look, you know, the pandemic affected the supply chain. So supply is dampened and demand is, there's been a lot of pent up demand. So this mismatch is going to cause a jump in inflation, which is causing people to have concerns in the markets, particularly with high growth tech, because it's done so well over the last many years, particularly last year. So there is a rotation to, you know, cyclicals and industrials, energies and materials type scenario. I mean, long term, well, a lot of people think this inflation is going to go away in the short term because, you know, supply will catch up with demand, and that, you know, the best case scenario is, you know, everything goes back to normal by the end of the year. And that is the best case, and that is obviously everyone's hoped for scenario. Mm. Behind the scenes, you know, there has been low inflation for, you know, decades now. But on the other side of the coin, you know, the U.S. is maintaining low tax regime, reducing bank capital reserve requirements, more stimulus, and an infrastructure stimulus coming up. They've been doing quantitative easing and buying assets and maintaining the overnight rates at zero, essentially. So all this is funneling mountains of cheap money, cheap to borrow money into the economy, and that in theory should be inflationary. And the only way, you know, and if inflation rises, interest rate rises, and with the sovereign debt, you know, how are they going to service that sovereign debt if interest rates rises without printing money? So I would say that you know, printing money has worked for the last decade, and it will continue working until it doesn't work anymore. And hopefully, you know, that never happens.
So what do you look at as a hedge towards inflation? I know you're not a fan of gold.
No, I was really looking at, you know, what is a hedge against inflation expectations rising? What is a hedge against high inflation? And really, there isn't very much that inversely correlates with you know, rising interest rate inflation expectations. So my favorite is just if you want to be careful, just hold the cash. So I really just moved from you know, my stock portfolio to cash. And, you know, gold and bonds and crypto and oil and, you know, industrials, you know, maybe you'll get lucky over the short term and be able to outperform. But long term, for me, it's just cash or digital economy stocks.
And what do you want listeners to think about when they think of the horizon for digital transformation? I mean, I know many listeners are thinking, I think I missed the boat, Mick, because my kids are already digitally native. The digital economy feels like it's been here for a while. What do you think is the horizon for opportunities when investing in the digital economy?
Well, let me ask you a question. When do you think, and well, let's take Singapore as an example, but it applies globally. When do you think every 70-year-old in Singapore will have a LinkedIn profile and a PayPal account, which they use to buy something on Lazada, and have an Instagram account and tweet?
Okay, so my mom's going to hate me for this, but mom is in that age area, and she's doing all that. And I think here in Singapore, we've really tried to narrow the digital divide. So I'd say like 5 years.
Okay, so maybe Singapore's ahead of the game. But I'm not talking about your mum. I'm talking about 95% of 70-year-olds. So I personally, globally, I feel that probably stretches out another 15, 20 years. So, you know, I think we've got another couple of decades to run. And you know, new technologies and applications within the digital economy are emerging all the time. I mean, look at Lemonade. You know, that only listed last year using artificial intelligence. You know, Unity software, which is a 3D virtualization software, which has applications in gaming and architecture and industry. And this is the new applications keep coming out. So, you know, I may be moving my, you know, couple of decades runway to be many decades. Maybe digital economy is just the bleeding edge of developing applications in technology.
So long runway of a couple of decades at least.
I think so.
I like the sound of that. Mick, great insights. Terrific speaking with you. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks, Michelle.
Always great speaking with investors who are so open, you know, with the principles and metrics that guide their decisions. Mick Mullins, he goes by the user ID LogicFool. You can read more of his articles, even copy his portfolio on eToro. Alan Michael Mullins, my guest today in Money and Me.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.